Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of December 27th, 2015. This is Jack Brissett Mills. We have a lovely conversation with Jessie. She's still in Taos, and I was able to talk to her one more time before she goes back to school. But first, the verses for the week. These are from week 39 of Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul. I wrote this first one 2 years ago about that verse. Verse 39. When I allow the infinite access to my thoughts, first there is clearness, followed by light. But as my thinking gains strength, its quickness frees me from its power, so there, within it, I am myself. And this one, 39a, that I wrote just last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse, 39a. The paradox of truth strikes the heart of my thinking. For as my thoughts grow sharper and I gain greater independence, my sense of self willingly succumbs to feeling united with all things, as the cosmos thinks in me. Thank you, Jesse, for the lovely conversation. Thank you for listening. Here we go. What shall we talk about?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I just had this two-part conversation with Kofi that you know, and I put the one up today. I was trying to get him to talk about what Steiner said about Christ, because it's December, Christmas time and all that. And neither he nor I are believers in a certain sense, but we're both intrigued by what Steiner said about Christ.
Yeah.
And so we tried to get into it a bit, and it was really interesting. Kofi is so gentle and kind. I really feel that he is as Christly as anybody ever comes.
Mm.
And yet he is easily tricked, and he kind of feels like he's not quite equipped to be in the modern world, because anyone can trick him, and
mm-hmm.
because he believes people so freely. It's troublesome. When you're a really good person, I think you're taken advantage of in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
That seems to be also here in Taos, that seems to be kind of a pattern I've seen, where there's a lot of people who are needing help and then a lot of people who are giving help, and it kind of is always rotating around, but people feel very easily taken advantage of.
The people giving help.
Yeah.
Hard to know what to say. We have to help. I mean, we have to try.
Right. Yeah, but there's a funny term here that I learned that called a dreambow, and it's a person who is kind of all about, you know, love and peace and rainbows, but then they kind of drain somebody or something.
Wow.
And that's a really interesting term. It kind of puts a label on certain people who kind of come through and kind of take a lot of the resources and then leave.
So are they supposedly on the helping side or on the taking side when they arrive?
Well, I think sometimes it's a little unclear.
They
kind of say, like, oh, we're all helping each other out. We all give and take, but then they kind of just do the take. I don't know. It's a new term to me, but I've been hearing it a bit since I've come here. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Yeah.
A dreamboat. I remember when I went to Waldorf training. Of course, everyone who goes to such a place will find this. I saw there were young men sitting without shirts on in the middle of a grassy area in a public space, and they're meditating. Mm-hmm. They're meditating in public. And you know there's I guess it's the same with yoga classes. You know there are people at the yoga classes that are not there for yoga. They're there for something else.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose rainbow is a great word for a lot of...
Yeah. But I think often in a place like this, it's hard, it's a fine line to not become a rainbow if you are struggling. It is winter and cold out and you're trying to feed people or something, a family or something.
Yeah.
It's easy to become the person who's constantly taking...
Everyone says you have to take care of yourself and your family first, and then you should take care of your larger family, yeah. and it's always hard to follow that. First of all, I haven't had much of a family. My family has taken care of me, but then I have my wife, and I have my friends, mm-hmm. and so I haven't really had to follow that picture. It never seemed quite right to me. I mean, the whole blood idea, I've never quite followed that. I think of you as my family as much as anybody, and so,
mm-hmm.
And I have many friends like that, that I don't segregate them based on my bloodline.
Right.
Have you had, I don't know that it's required, I don't know that I have an armor to protect me from the world, but I guess I do. I guess I must have an armor. Do you feel like you are solid and strong in yourself? You're only 19, right? Yeah.
I'm 20, yeah.
20?
I think I definitely struggle with that a lot. I remember when I was younger, my mom used to always give me I don't know what kind of cream it was, to rub on my chest to try to create some kind of protection layer. And I really felt that that was really useful.
Cool.
Because school would just drain me so much, and I felt drained by people and what people were asking of me a lot.
Cool.
And I do think I do still struggle with that a bit, getting drained from people.
Because you're naturally a giving person, I think, whether you feel that way or not, but...
Yeah, probably. I think I'm pretty solid in myself in terms of feeling okay in myself and that I can take care of myself.
I know a lot of...
Yeah.
In my generation, I and my friends would take consciousness-altering drugs, marijuana, etc. And... some of my friends had bad trips, so-called bad trips, where
mm-hmm.
they would lose themselves. They would freak out somehow.
And, right.
And I never had that problem. I was always hard as a rock. I would take the maximum dose of anything, and just to see. And so I've always been envious of the people who are kind of hysterical. They're able to go crazy. I've never been able to go crazy. I've never been able to lose myself.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the same thing as an armor.
Yeah, I think it is in a sense, for sure.
This one lady, came over to ask if we could help her, because she felt like she was on the verge of hysteria. She was a neighbor of ours, and she was our age, I guess. We were maybe 25. And when she came into our apartment, she was coming to ask us for help because she knew we were stable and kind, whatever.
Right.
But she saw our apartment, and she goes, "Oh, my God, I think I see a problem right away." And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, you have to come see my apartment." And so we went to her apartment, and it was completely spotlessly ordered and clean. And then I realized what she meant, because Barbara and I just have stuff everywhere. And and she somehow saw that was somehow related to sanity, that her cleanliness and her order were props in a way that were not quite working for her.
Right, they were trying to keep some kind of order inside of her, maybe, too.
Yeah, and she saw that Barbara and I didn't really need that. But,
right.
I mean, we do in our own way. I totally have my own order, but outwardly it probably doesn't look like other people's order. But
Yeah.
I mean, what makes an armor is quite a thing. I mean, routine does it. Do you feel like you have much routine in your life?
Yeah, and I think the more I do, the more I do feel very steady in myself. For instance, if I have a routine before going to sleep and then waking up that it's that I stick to, and no matter who I'm around or anything like that, that always makes me feel very, very steadfast.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about the need for a weekend? Have you ever had the need for a weekend?
For a weekend?
You know how people are out of balance all week long. They don't really like what they're doing, but they have to do it for some reason.
Hmm.
And then the weekend comes, and then they go out of balance the other way.
Right, right.
I suppose you can't avoid that in school or when you're making money and working for someone else.
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel like this spending these 3 months down here is like kind of a blown-up version of a week and a weekend, where I've been in school for all these months, and now I'm finally saying I'm going to have a little bit more of a chilled-out 3 months down here.
So the 3 months,
I don't think I've swung to a different way or something, though.
The 3 months is kind of a weekend.
Right, right. That's how it felt. But
I brought that up because I'm at a time now where I can have every day is the same. I get up when I like, which happens to be early, and I do what I like, which sometimes happens to be making money.
Yeah.
But it's really quite a lovely routine I've got, and I don't find much difference on the weekend, except that I notice it's quieter on the roads on some days.
Right, right.
But the idea of a routine is, I love getting up the same time every day. It really is nice after a while.
Yeah, I think that if you're actually doing what you love and what you should be doing with your life, you won't feel that much of a difference between the week and the weekend. Because I think that kind of comes out of this need for, you know, you work, and then you do what you like or something.
This myth of retirement one day.
Right.
It's very similar. Yeah. It's very similar to the slaves having the idea of heaven. It's kind of
something for later.
Yeah, we feed people these ideas that you'll be fine in the future.
Right, definitely.
It's really sad. I don't think you are having that problem at all. I think you've been enjoying your life.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to really have that problem.
I wonder what happened to you to make you like that.
Hopefully.
I mean, what happened?
I don't know. I feel like I'm I was just thinking about this yesterday. I was talking with a friend about how some people are just generally more happy than others, and we were trying to figure out where that comes from. And I think I'm just someone who so far just generally enjoyed things. I've enjoyed school, I'm enjoying college, I've enjoyed jobs that I've had. And I don't know if that's because of the specific positions I put myself in, or if I'm just more predisposed to happiness or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or even chemical that something in your body gives the feeling of happiness.
Right.
I mean, that belittles anything that you've done for yourself. It could also be that there are repeated Earth lives, and you've been here more often, and you know what to expect.
Yeah.
And who knows?
Well, I think I can also put a lot of the, I can really appreciate my parents for a lot of it too, and having a lot of education and just the kind of opportunities I've had in my life, for sure. I can give a lot of credit to those.
Have you noticed how it's different? I mean, you've seen a lot of other people now. Of course, they don't tell you how it was when they were 5 and 6 years old, but your little routines before bed and your little routines at getting up were probably very different than the rest of the American world anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. I've kind of started to notice now that I've moved further and further away from going to school at a Waldorf school, that I've started to meet people who are drawn to Waldorf people. Like here, for instance, I met someone and he became friends with me and then became friends with someone who was teaching at the Waldorf school here at the same time, and that kind of things like that. Which is, I don't know, it's an interesting pattern.
It is funny that we can kind of recognize each other. There was in Manhattan, up in the Upper West Side, there was a little theater that was putting on one of Rudolf Steiner's dramas. He wrote four dramas. Mm-hmm. And Barbara and I went, we were in New York at the time, so we went down on Broadway. It was on Broadway, and we saw the marquee up above. It said, "Tonight only, Rudolf Steiner." And it was fun to see that. And then we're kind of hanging around outside before the opening, and here's a bus pulls up. And my God, I didn't know anyone on that bus, but there were 50 people that I knew every one of them, just everything about every one of them. I could have just gone home with any of them. They were just exactly my kind of person. It's very weird. Nothing outwardly. Yeah. It's not like their Birkenstocks or their wool or something, but it was just just the look in their eyes was so familiar.
Yeah, and sometimes my friends say, "Wow, you're so unique," and then they list some things, and I say, "Well, it seems unique to you, but go to any Waldorf school, and I'm kind of a carbon copy of a lot of students there." But to non-Waldorf people, I seem very unique.
I really think a lot of that is this instilling of rhythm.
Yeah.
I remember sitting with, when I was first in the community, I was teaching way back in the 80s. Maybe early 90s, and I was at a friend's house, and they had little kids, and the little kids loved us. They were climbing all over us. One is Corel. She's someone who's been on my podcast, and they were just climbing all over us, and we came over to watch a movie, so I was thinking, oh, my God, these kids are never going to go to bed. You know, we're never going to watch this movie. And then suddenly the mom says something like, 1, 2, 3s. I don't know what she meant by that, but suddenly the kids were up and gone to the bathroom. And then I look at them, what the heck is going on here? And then after that, they show the mom what they did, and then they they're in the bed, and then the mom comes in with a candle. It takes like 20 minutes to get through the whole thing, but after 20 minutes, the mother has done a verse with the kids, and the dad's in there doing a verse, and the kids are doing verses back to the parents. It's a big deal. It takes 20 or 30 minutes. But then the kids are in bed, and they know they belong in bed, and they're not going to get up, and it's amazing. I was just so amazed that you can do that as a parent. It takes a lot of work, though. But then again, you get this result. These kids have this rhythm in them. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, maybe they don't even know what they got, but they expect that every night. That's going to happen every night.
Right. It's so much easier for the kids than to not have that. I don't know, I got a job for the weekend working at the ski valley here, working in the children's center. And it's pretty frustrating a lot to watch how they interact with the children, because there's no rhythm at all to the day, and they talk to them like little adults. In some senses, they talk to them like little adults by giving them all this information to do all the time, and directions and commands and everything. And then in another sense, they're not actually talking to them like adults, because they're not really looking at them as people. They're, you know, they have all these little phrases. They say, "Hey, buddy, how's it going today?" You know, and like, they have all these, I don't know, it's very frustrating, because then the children get really frustrated and they start getting out of control and overwhelmed, and they can't take all of the information. But if there was just some kind of rhythm that the children were going to go through where they were all doing it together, it would really make a process a lot easier for everybody involved.
It's hard to believe an adult wouldn't know that a child can tell just as well as you and I can when someone's being false.
Right.
You know, it's so obvious that's really great. You know, the adult will say, but they're not looking, and they're just trying to say something appropriate. And it's rough. But when I see Barbara's, she does Eurythmy in the kindergartens here, and you forget, but in those kindergartens, like today is bread day. They make bread. Right. They make bread every whatever day it is. Every Wednesday they make bread, whatever.
Yeah.
And what I don't know, at the end of the thing they clean up. Every day they clean up, and every morning they have a circle time where they, I don't know what they do in the circle time. What are they doing?
Yeah.
You can tell me these things. But it's just some kind of building of a foundation of a life where you believe things are happening correctly. Oh, yes, I know this day. This I recognize this day. This is when this happens.
And yeah.
Piece
yeah.
by piece over the years, you start to get strong in your soul. Your soul becomes strong.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, no matter what happens during the day, I'll be able to go home and have that verse with my parents yeah. and light that candle yeah. and get tucked in. And
yeah.
It's all, yeah. Yeah.
There was this great line in War and Peace where the doctor, this is the 1800s, the doctor would come and the author knew and he wrote that the medicine, of course, was a little bit of poison,
right.
so it doesn't help. But what helps is that the people have to take it very religiously. Every 2 hours, they take this amount. And just the fact that they do it regularly, that's what cures them. The idea that they
yeah.
suddenly have order in their life.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could bring some of that to the ski valley. They don't even give the 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds a nap during the day.
Huh.
They just give them lessons the whole day long.
Yeah. Like they're little adults. We saw a demonstration. It was sad. But we'd heard that you shouldn't give kids too much decisions to make on their own. The way they learn to make decisions is that they see adults make decisions.
Right.
And so we were in a deli, and the little boy and the man were in front of us, and he says, okay, what do you want, chicken or beef or lamb? Or, and, of course, the kid maybe says chicken, maybe. But then the guy said, okay, then you want the submarine sandwich or the panini? Or the, and he just kept going, and after a while, the kid couldn't handle it anymore. And just the idea that how do you make someone learn to make decisions? That's what you want. You want someone with clear, concise decision-making ability when they grow up. It's illogical to think that you train them by not making them make decisions, but that turns out to be the way it is. You make decisions for them when they're young, and they learn better later. Do you feel that? Do you remember that much, or...?
Yeah, I don't have that many memories at all about decision-making or the lack of decision-making when I was young. But I'm sure that there wasn't that much of those little decisions.
Or if you do give them a choice, which they require, maybe they require the idea that they have a choice, but you give them the choice of two things and either one is okay with you. You want red or green, you know? And
right, right.
Not...
Yeah.
The idea was... For a child, everything is so huge and amazing that it's almost like asking them to decide what sunset you would like today.
Right.
It's just too big.
Yeah.
It's too huge.
Yeah. And, well, I do remember that being an issue when I was younger, and we would eat, I don't know, my family still laughs about this, but we would be eating like bread and spreads or something for dinner, and I never, ever could make the decision what to put on my bread because anything would be okay. And so I used to always just say, whatever Julia's having, whatever my big sister's having. That was always, and they thought it was so funny, but it was just because that was an easy way to make that decision.
Yeah, that's great.
So I didn't know otherwise, yeah. Up at the ski valley again, there was this little boy who was having a really hard time with transition, and so he was having a hard time when his mom dropped him off and then having a hard time getting outside to go on the ski slope. And it was the people around his ski instructor was making it really difficult by saying, like, what do you want to do then? What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to put your skis on? Do you want to stay in and play? And the kid was really losing it and was kind of having a tantrum in the corner and couldn't do it. And so finally I just came in. It's not really my place to come in and kind of take over the situation, but it was going on too long and he was really really having a hard time kind of like stomping in the corner and laying down and stuff. So finally I came in and I said, your ski instructor is going outside now and there's blocks in here to play with. She's getting her things on and then walking out the door so you can go with her or stay here. And then I told her she had to go do that. And so she went and put her stuff on, and then he put his stuff on and went with her, and it was fine.
Nice.
But all of the questions and everything, he couldn't handle what to do, but if everyone else was just doing their thing, then he could just go along with it.
Yeah. This intellectuality doesn't apply,
right.
Doesn't really apply that at that age, at least not for most people.
Right. It's really hard for them, actually, to try to operate like that.
Barbara and I have always joked we should write a book on child rearing because we've never done it. It's much easier to know what to do when you haven't done it.
Exactly. I was going to say, maybe you're the perfect people to write it.
Once I gave a talk on curative eurythmy, Barbara was a eurythmy student at the time, but I had read the book, you know, and she couldn't believe that I was going to give a talk on that, but I knew so little that I could give a perfectly good talk about it.
Right.
But the experts know it. You can't do it.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I feel like I could probably be a pretty good marriage coach or something. Even though I've never experienced marriage.
You can see perfectly how to do it.
Yeah, it seems clear to me from this point of view.
So where do you meet the perfect person? I tell people that you should go join a choir.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think you should meet the perfect spouse at the bar. I don't think that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. I think people go to these specific places to meet people, and that's not where the people, I think. I think that the perfect place to meet somebody is in some kind of place that doing something that you would also be interested in doing, or interested in someone who is doing that, but kind of in a more kind of learning or creative environment.
Like a life drawing, a life drawing class or something where.
Right. Yeah.
Or a dance class. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or like a workshop or a symposium or something.
Yeah, for me, it was always some kind of community band or something.
Yeah, I think somewhere where people are coming anyway to kind of expand or grow, or you know, they kind of have room for something new, then they might also have room for a new person.
The less intelligent male idea is go to where beautiful women are in the first place. Like so they'll go to Whole Foods and hang around because there's healthy women there, or they'll go to a yoga class and look around.
Right.
Do you have this theory like
Seems
I
like
do?
A hard place.
We have this theory about yoga pants that they're totally made just for hooking up at yoga meetings. But again, I can say that because I never go to any, so I have no idea what's really going on.
Right. Yeah, that ends up just being the creepy people then in the corner that no one's interested in.
Men with gold chains and things like that.
Right.
Well, good luck with your trip back to your Adobe oven. Your Adobe oven. Do you kind of miss it, or will it be, oh my God, here I go again?
I think I'm getting a little comfortable in the house now, so it's going to be, we just got a bunch of snow, so it's going to be roughing it a bit, but it'll be nice to be back.
This whole comfort idea is so hard to resist. You shouldn't really go toward comfort all the time, but when you are comfortable, it's hard not to appreciate it. I really love comfort. I don't have to have it, I don't think. I like to camp, I like to lay on the ground, but I sure appreciate comfort.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really nice.
Have you taken care of an animal other than your farm animals? Because when you have a pet, you can give them unlimited comfort. You can really just, they need a bigger pillow, and they need air conditioning. They need air conditioning, and it was really a pleasure for me to take care of a dog, just to give him everything he needs. Go ahead.
Well, my friend and I have a little rat, but he doesn't. Yeah. He's pretty independent, though.
I met him.
Yeah, you met him.
He was so amazing when I came in the room. He knew I was not a friend of his. I mean, at least he knew he didn't know me yet. And so he couldn't come out.
Yeah, he'll hide when people come in who doesn't know. Yeah, but I love to give him little treats and make sure, you know, everything's all nice for him. But he's pretty wild. He kind of just runs around the room and does his own thing.
And he's being taken care of.
That's probably a little different.
He's being taken care of. He's taken care of while you're out in Taos. Because he lives in...
Yeah, he's with my friend.
Yeah,
I miss him though. But I got really tempted into getting a baby Angora rabbit the other day.
Oh wow!
And that would have been quite the little creature to be taken care of.
Yeah, and then if they get along, the rat and the rabbit.
Yeah, the rabbit and the rat.
I wonder. That's a good.
Yeah, what was that?
I was going to say that's a good short story. The rabbit and the rat. That's very nice.
Yeah, that does sound good. Yeah.
Whatever you were just going to say, did you lose it?
Oh, I was just going to say that I went to this house and they had so many rabbits all over and these huge Angora bunnies and they just had these little Angora babies and they're just a little fluffy.
Oh, yeah.
They were so sweet just to hold and they just sit in your arms and then I was thinking about all the wool I could make with their with their hair.
Yep.
They're really sweet. And then someday maybe rabbits too.
Someday. And you're good at knitting, I suppose.
Yeah, but I've been doing a lot of spinning recently.
Yeah. Hand with a little hand spinner or some other kind with a loop with a treadle. What do you call it?
Well, I managed to get the college to buy a spinning wheel to have around, but now I've been gone, so I've had a little hand spindle with me.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I love your life. I think you love your life, too. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
No one knows how long
Your life is very inspiring.
Well, no one knows how long they last. If you can really just appreciate every day and be thankful and be happy if it ends. If it ends, it's okay because it's just so wonderful all this bit has been.
Right.
You know, some people say you can't say a person has a good life until you see the whole thing because what if they're in prison now and they're suffering for... I actually think I've had such a good life that I could actually be the last 20, 30 years in a horrible place and it would be still balancing out the other way. I would still feel that was a great life.
Yeah.
Anyway, love it like it. Love it while it lasts.
Yeah, for sure.
And
maybe that's an age thing, though. You're at a point where you know that it's only a certain amount of time potential into the future, so you know that the ratio is slanted towards positivity.
Hey, do you have any connection to the idea that when you're young, you should be more careful, and when you're old, you should be less? Or the opposite, when you're young, you should be less careful? Do you have a feeling? You know, most young people are less careful, and most old people are more careful of themselves. But
I was talking to someone on the bus today, and she was talking about her love life a bit, and how now that she's old, she's probably, I don't know how old she is, in her 50s maybe. She was saying, now that I'm this old, I can, you know, I'm so free and I can just do whatever. And I was thinking, well, probably you could have been the same when you were my age.
Yeah.
But there were some, I don't know what the inhibitors were. But I don't know if it's actually that now that she's old, she can be like that. Or if it's just that in herself, she's just gotten to that place.
Yeah, the body doesn't do what you want it to do. They say, old people say, youth is wasted on the wrong people. when you're young, I don't know what it is. I mean, from an old point of view, you think, well, every young person will be having sex every day, twice a day, 10 times a day, because that's what you would do if you were young again. But when you're young, you don't do that. You're self-conscious. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it seems there's more social inhibitors or something when you're younger.
Yeah, and then when you're older, you lose the social
inhibitors. Yeah.
And then, but you lose the body then too, and it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was always keen on not being someone who would have a midlife crisis. I wanted to have a good youth, so that
so
I would,
you wouldn't need that.
Yeah. So because it's so obvious that everybody will have that if they get married too young, if they get a job too soon. All these things, they know, you know that it's not going to turn out well.
Right.
And so I think you're doing the right, I think from the outside, you're doing the right thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine what my what a midlife crisis would look like for me.
Yeah, you suddenly have to get a job with an insurance company. You just have to go to Wall Street.
Oh, gosh.
You just have to, because you're missing something, right?
That would be a weird thing to miss.
It'd be cool. It'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be great if you don't ever feel like you need to retire and you don't ever feel like you need to have a midlife crisis. That would be a good life.
Right. Yes.
Thanks, Jesse.
Those are kind of funny goals to have.
To not
I think they're good goals, but it's funny that those... that, I don't know, our society or something creates it so that those are goals that people come up with. I'm not going to have a midlife crisis, and I'm not going to have to feel like I need to get retired.
There are these three or four checks I, mainly for some of my brothers that I don't get along with. Have you been divorced? Have you been bankrupt? Have you have you been arrested? Have you gone to prison? These kind of and if someone has one or two or three of those things, they're still kind of okay. But if they have all four, it's rough. You know, they're having a rough time.
Yeah.
Or if they have two or three divorces or two or three bankruptcies, and
right.
Then, of course, then you've got Donald Trump, and you can run for president. So.
Yeah. But who knows how he actually feels about his life.
Yeah, you can kind of tell, but...
Yeah.
Thanks, Jesse. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thanks again, Jesse. Good luck back at school. And thank you for listening. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions... please go to my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net, and drop me a line. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Until the new year, bye-bye.